God bless the flag, we all beating our chest. When it's peace, it's the same old game. The same old players, same old names. My skin is my sin. My skin is my sin.
Man, I ain't had that intro in such a long time, man. You are now tuned in to My Skin is My Sin presents another episode of Intellectually Petty Radio featuring the legend himself, Mr. Frank Nick. Can you hear me, King? Hello. Are you there, Mr. Frank Nick? Mr. Frank Nick? You should be able to hear me. All right. So let's see. Let me see. Let me make sure I can hear me. And what I was doing, man, I was talking to the people, and you were hearing me in the background. Unless that's Carlene. I don't know if that's Carlene. All right, yeah, bet. Okay, yeah, so we can hear me. I don't know who that is, that 323 number. 323, what's good, fam? Can you hear me?
Can you hear me? Yeah, it's Frank now.
Oh, yeah. What's good, player?
What's going on, brother? I don't know what's going on with the audio today. It is not working with me, I tell you.
Oh, man, that's that black cloud I got over me, bro. It ain't you.
No, I ain't going to put it on that, bro.
What up, though, man? How you doing?
I'm chilling, man. Just, you know, chicken with the head cut off today, man. You know, doing this Dilla Fest on Saturday out here in L.A. And, you know, just running around because I'm producing the show as well as performing with Frank and Dak. So, yeah, man, it's, you know, just running.
Why, bro? Like, why? Why are you still carrying the Dilla torch?
The best way to explain it is that it's not, I get it, he's Dilla to y'all, but that's James to me. You understand?
Got you.
And, you know, I met that man in 1986, 12 years old, so I was a very, very young man. And this whole journey up until the point he passed, and even after the point he passed, has been about, like, a lot of what I do is what I learned from him. You understand? So, and then, you know, I'm ingrained in his family. His mom is my mom. His little brother is my brother. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's bigger than just the musical side of it. That's amazing, and I'm still in awe, you know, the places he's able to reach musically. And so, but it's for me personally, not for everyone else, but for me personally, it's bigger than just the music. So, you know, the work I do, the things I do, it's not about money. It's just about paying homage to somebody who helped me and was truly my friend besides the whole music thing. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. That's dope, man. Hey, I hope I have a friend that's like that when it's my time.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I told somebody the other day, man, I'm blessed in the sense that I actually have friends that I've known for almost 40 years. You know what I'm saying? And we can still link up and kick it. So, you know, it's a blessing, bro. I don't know how to categorize it any other way. And you know, I feel like you should honor those things if possible. And, you know, being a Dilla's kind of a unique situation in my scope of friends. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Makes for these unique circumstances, I guess.
Man, and you know what, man? And I tell people all the time, man, like, I had no clue who the man was when he was with us. And I was in Detroit, grew up in Detroit, born and raised. And mm-hmm. they don't get it. And I'm like, well, there's rock bottom and then there's Jay Dilla.
Yeah.
And at the time, I guess he wasn't flashy enough for niggas in Detroit.
Well, no. I mean, yes. But not in the same way, not in the same manner. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Don't get it twisted. The jewels and, you know, he was riding Lex trucks, Rovers, and, you know, the whole thing, big coats and the whole shot. But he was so much more into the music
mm-hmm.
that all of the other things that come with that, he didn't really have time for. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So. Yeah, you might catch us rolling up tomorrow, but we probably going somewhere to buy records or going to the studio or doing some work. yep, we're going to go to, you're going to catch us in the strip club. But realistically, we go to the strip club so that we can go record records after. You understand? So it wasn't presented the same way. It didn't have the same Detroit kind of flash on it. Because ultimately, even though him as a person would have been a sore thumb in, like, you know, a backpack audience, if you just put him in there just because the way he was dressed and the way whatever, his music was consumed and loved by that so-called backpack, you know, genre of hip-hop. You know what I'm saying? So he made a certain type of music. It was more soul music and not so much street things, even though he spoke about street activity, because I'm saying,
actually, y'all was a perfect balance too, bro. Him and Frank and Dank, like, y'all content gave his beat that street vibe.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that was the goal for us, because, you know, Slum had, even though they talked about certain things, the way it was presented, it was a little warmer, a little more friendly. Yeah, it was a little more friendly and a little more, you know, it was just had more warmth vocally. We rapped over the same beats, technically. You know what I'm saying? The same type of beat. And it's coming from the same guy. But we did it from the perspective of, you know, kind of, I won't say street guys, but hood guys. You know what I'm saying? Looking out. As opposed to, you know, more backpack guys looking in. If that makes any sense.
It makes complete sense, bro. I get it. What was your first rhyme?
Oh, man. The first rhyme I wrote, Persian High School in the lunchroom. Well, I wrote it at home. But it was maybe 10th grade year, so around 1990. Because I was a DJ up until that point. Right?
Okay.
And T3 and Batin from Slum, we all went to high school together.
Oh,
and
man, I'm sorry to hear you. I went to Persian.
Yeah, you're funny. What, you went to Osborne or some West Side school or something?
I went to Ford.
Oh, you went to Ford. Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, I understand how you Ford people. I'm sure, you know, you Ford people don't like us too much on the basketball court. At least not my years. Maybe after or before.
It was ugly.
My years.
Y'all were killing us on the basketball court.
So, but I used to love driving past Ford in my car. You know, y'all had some bomb little ladies over there, let me tell you.
That is true. That is true. Y'all did not.
We had a few, but they was hidden. They was hidden gems, bro. They was hidden gems. But
yeah, man.
So,
you must have been inside when I was over there.
I know. It's all good. That's that good Detroit love right there. You know?
Right.
So, but no, in the lunchroom, and it was actually Slum. They wasn't Slum Village at the time, I don't think. Right. It was right before, because Dilla didn't come to Persian until later. But it was Botan and T3 from Slum Village. It was like, oh, because we used to be in the lunchroom, beat on the table, and because I was the DJ, I would usually be beating on the table. It was me and Botan's job to provide the beat. And then Botan and T3 would, you know, spit verses while we had lunch or whatever. And one day they did this verse. They did this, it's like a song they was working on. And they both had verses. And it was called Drop the Drum. And it was like just on a whim. T3 was like, yo, Frank, you should write a verse to this tonight and spit it tomorrow. And Botan was like, yeah, man, you should do it. And that's how, you know, Frank's the rap guy started.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on the homies, and then I, you know, we wrote my little rap. I don't remember all of it, but, you know.
That was the first one, though, huh?
That was the very first one. That's what started it all off. And then, you know, I kind of went on a mission of just trying to develop. And, you know, my first real things that I let people hear, though, I should do voicemail, right?
And for those,
you know,
young
call,
kids, those are recordings.
Yeah, yeah.
And somebody calls and pick up the phone.
Yeah, this is what they hear. They call you, you don't answer the phone. Yeah, if you, when somebody call you and you don't answer your phone, this is what they gonna hear. So
exactly.
When I was in a little bit in high school, but not so much. Like, it was a little after high school. I used to do record with actual vinyl kids, vinyl, like the, you know, the place that they put on. It was actual vinyl. I used to service clubs with new music from the record label, right?
Oh, wow.
I worked with a big promoter in Detroit, Mark Hicks, right?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you know Mark Hicks. Okay, shout out Mark Hicks. I used to work for Mark Hicks and service the DJs in the strip clubs, mostly on the East Coast, you know, on the East Side, Woodward and further east, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would service the records. So when I would get all of this vinyl and cassettes and everything of all of the new stuff that would come out, and a lot of times, you know, with vinyl, when it's a single, there's an instrumental on it. So the first raps people ever really heard from me, I would take whatever the popular song, like I did Busta's Put Your Hands With My Eyes to See, I did One More Chance by Biggie, and a couple other joints, right? Where I took mm-hmm. the beat, and I took, like, whatever Biggie's flow was, his cadence and everything, but I changed it to the vocals, to or changed the lyrics to talking about leaving a message on my voicemail, right?
Oh, wow.
So when you called, you would hear a beat that you knew. The flow would feel the same, but it would be me talking about leaving a message, right? And it got so crazy that Dank would call, and he called me and say, Frank, don't answer your phone, because then he would three-way a bunch of people and call them so they could hear what I did on the voicemail.
That's dope.
We go from wild, and like, you know, and that kind of started with Dilla, because when Dilla first started cranking out beats and shit, you know what I'm saying? That Dank would do that. He would get like two or three of his friends to get on their phone, call somebody on three-way, and there'd be six, seven people on the phone, and call Dilla, and so Dilla could play beats for everybody.
So was there ever like, okay, a trash era for y'all, or was y'all just dope out the gate?
Oh, man. That's not something I can answer, bro. I'll say there was a time when there was a learning curve, I would think. You know what I'm saying? When you learn, but I don't know about the trash part. But there was a learning time. But for us, because, you know, our situation was unique, Slum Village was first, right? They was the big dog, right? So they jumped out there first. So we had time to sit and learn and hone our craft and have them help us and all these different things before anybody ever heard anything from us. Like, Dilla was so crafty. Like, once he cracked into the industry and got Slum Straight and he was producer for Tribe and all these different folks, like, Frank and Dank didn't have no records done. We had maybe one or two records, but they were old and we hadn't really done nothing with them. And he was still people knew, like, the artists he would work with, he'd just be like, yeah, Frank and Dank. My guy, my group. So everybody expected us to have records eventually before we ever had records, because that was just, we were lucky in that sense. You know what I'm saying? That we had someone of his caliber and then some a crew in the caliber of Slum that kind of believed in us and was going to help us out. You get what I'm saying? So, yeah, man, I don't know. It was a learning curve. I don't know about trash time. It was a learning curve. And then, you know.
Am I? You know, I used to rap, man, back in the day, and clearly I was trash, or, you know, this would be a much different conversation.
Right.
So I know. So I know, bro, from a point of experience, you feel me?
Yeah, work.
Man, what's been the highlight thus far?
Oh, man. I mean, that's tough, bro, like, because I'm in a situation where, you know, all this, I give all of the things that I, like, even like this weekend, like, you know, this is a community event, free for the kids, the venue holds 7,000 people, and they come in there to see about Dilla. You know what I'm saying?
So, still, to this day.
Like, yeah, right now. Yeah, no,
that's crazy
for sure.
Right there.
Like, you know, I travel every year doing Dilla tributes, as well as, you know, other shows and things of that nature. But every year there's that, you know what I'm saying? Like, he still has that presence, which is crazy. And we do the things we do to, you know, keep the legacy going. And, you know, I'm ingrained in it way deeper. Like, speaking to what I said before, like, you know, Jay Dilla Merch, I'm running Jay Dilla Merch at this point. You know what I'm saying? For his mom and family that owns it. But, you know, the day-to-day work, you know, manufacturing shirts, coming up with designs and all of that type of thing between myself and Delicious Vinyl, you know, which is kind of my home label, does manufacturing for it. Between us, you know, we're doing the day-to-day to keep that going and make that work. And, you know, that's just another responsibility that I have. And it's cool because why I'm doing it. You understand? It's not to get rich. It's not to eat like that, because I would be doing it all wrong if that was the case. I would have to, you know, cut out a few more people and step on a few heads and knuckles and just be dirty. You know what I'm saying? Nah, this is clean, and it's just doing the
organic.
Right thing. Yeah, it's an organic, doing the right thing type of situation. So, you know, my heart, I can sleep well at night. I know I'm helping out my man's legacy and doing my best I can for the family and, you know. And, you know, what more can I ask for? So in that particular situation, because, you know, I signed up for this. It's not like I'm forced to do this or anything like that. I want to do it. And then to be able to do it and try to achieve the right thing, I think, is the goal. And I feel like, you know, I'm doing that. Now, you know, a multi-million-dollar shoe deal for Dilla would be awesome. But, you know, I ain't gonna bank on that. You get what I'm saying?
I mean, so, it's possible, though. And I would say probable.
Yeah, yeah, no, and I don't doubt that it's there. It's there, you know what I mean? And it just takes time to get to these things. You got to, you know, crawl before you walk type of thing. So, you know, and
I'm surprised Nagash has not reached out to y'all.
Yeah?
Like, just off-rip, that just seems like a perfect marriage. Both, you know, Detroit-based, they make some quality shit.
Right, right.
You know, just throwing that out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Y'all listening, man, you know.
We
fuck with
we
you.
Open. We'll listen.
Yeah,
man. You know, so it's just like a, I don't know, I guess it's just a mission that I'm on. And I guess when you're on a mission, you might as well be satisfied. It's better, because a lot of people on missions, they don't want to be on.
Man,
I don't mind the mission that I'm on. I'm good. You feel what I'm saying?
Yo, and there's a big ass mural of Dilla I saw actually Saturday.
Okay.
I was in the city. On Holcomb, and I forget the cross street.
Yeah,
right,
I heard. I
gotta
go see when I'm back in the D for sure.
Matter of fact, I'm gonna inbox you to pick, because I'm like, damn, I'm about to interview old boy, and this is just wild that I'm seeing this shit. I had never seen it before.
Yeah.
So I just sent you actually the two pics that I saw that I took.
Okay. Yeah, I'll check some stuff. That's crazy.
Yeah, I just thought that, you know, and just the impact, man, is crazy, man. Oh, if people, I know you got some new shit coming out, right?
I got things out. Everything is out right now. But yeah, I got some joints to tell you about.
if they want to get in touch with you, how they do that? Let's get that out the way.
At Frank Knit. Everywhere, Twitter, Instagram, and Frank Knit on Facebook. My Facebook, though, is like, it's two pages, a fan page and then a private page, or, well, like, you know, like a regular page. And I do most of my business and working on the regular page, but I think it's up on I can't get accept any more friends, and they stop you at like 5,000. So, but Instagram, I'm there, you know, we can run those numbers up all they like. And Twitter, I'm there, you can run those up all you like. And yeah, so I got a book out right now. It's a digital book. It's an e-book. It's called Travel Rap, right? And the book is basically about, I wrote the book for basically my guys like you that come from where I come from. Like, obviously I'm from Detroit, so when I say like me, I mean, you know, the people I grew up with, and then those people in every other, you know, mostly black city, and then for whoever that has a weird view of travel. You know what I'm saying? Because I feel like a lot of, like when I first got into the game, like, you know, because of we underground hip-hop, part of that, when you get to a certain level, or if it's about touring, is done out of the country, right?
Yeah.
I've toured America. I did, you know, a 20-city tour in America before. So it's not like I haven't been here, but most of my tours and real extensive touring has been Europe, Japan, and China. You know what I'm saying? So I've been all over the world type thing, right?
Wait a minute, you did a show in China?
Yeah, no, we did. I was there for like a month. We did Shanghai, Taipei, and Taiwan. We did like crazy festival down in this little small town called Kendengu, all types of stuff, right? So throughout all that traveling, like I've been all basically all over the world, right? And you know, just had all types of crazy things happen because I'm traveling. Like I tell people all the time, I've never actually been on vacation. I've been all over the world. All the places people go for vacation, Paris, London, Berlin, all the European spots. I've been to Russia. I've been to Burma. You know what I'm saying? Little small East European countries, Estonia and Slovakia. I've been all over the place.
So are the groupies the same everywhere?
They ain't the same, but they're everywhere. Let's just say that you can find a groupie in, even in the smallest little country you'll never think. Yes, you can find one. You can find one. Now,
I don't know, I'm childish, man. I'm sorry.
It is. But I'm saying it's true, though. It's not like that. I mean, it's like I get it. I'm an elder statesman in the hip hop thing now. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't too much mess around with the groupie love anymore. Like it's not even fun anymore at this point. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm just more into, you know, trying to get the paper and do the business and get that right and make sure the people who love my music get a good show and feel they saw what they wanted to see. So, but yeah, so the book Travel Rap is about that. It's about me being all over the world and seeing all these different things. But what I want to do, I didn't want to just, because it got some crazy stories in it, right? Like about things that I went through on the road from, I'll mention a couple in a minute. But what I wanted to do is like give people, again, who's never experienced that and maybe even never thought about that because they grew up how I grew up. You know what I'm saying? Yep, you might have family a little down south or something. And, you know, when you get a little older, you might go as far as Jamaica or something. You know what I'm saying? And there's a lot of world after Jamaica that you can go see. Nothing wrong with Jamaica. Jamaica's beautiful. You know what I'm saying?
I've been to Windsor.
Right. See, I lived in Toronto for 4 years. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it's the world's out there. So what I did was give, like, travel tips, you know, just about being out of the country, keeping in, you know, in contact with your passport and, you know, just little tips about things you should try to find out before you go. When if you go into China, you know, find out customs and things so you don't get caught in a situation that you can't get out of. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so it's tips and things like that. But every tip that I give, I then give a crazy story that pertains to that tip. Right?
Okay.
So I talked about this. I'll give you a good one. One of the tips is about knowing, because on a tour, you know, a lot of times when I tour Europe, it's flights. You know, so you fly into one city, go do the show. Next morning, you go back to the airport, get on another flight, go to the next city, right?
Right.
Sometimes
right.
You get tour buses. When you get when it comes to a bunch of shows, you know, above 15, you end up with a bus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or some type of vehicle to take you from city to city. And Europe is much like the United States in the sense that, like, you know, you can hop in your car and drive from California to Nevada right now, right? And it's not a border there or anything. You're just going to drive and you'll be in Nevada, right?
Right.
Europe is like that, but it's from country to country that's like that. You understand? So, like, there's a city, one of my favorite cities in Germany. It's called Cologne, right? And it's
right.
only my favorite city because it's in Germany. But it's only an hour and a half away from Amsterdam by car, right? So, and I'm a chronic smoker myself, right? Like, so Amsterdam is, you know, one of my favorite places, right? So, so you can hop in your car and just drive to Amsterdam from Germany. So you're driving from Germany to Holland, No border crossing, no nothing. Right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You just hop in your car and drive an hour, and you can go to Amsterdam for the day and smoke your face off legally, and then drive back to Germany where it's not legal like that and be fine. Right?
Okay.
No border crossing, no nothing. So you can drive. What I'm saying is, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours, and you can be in a whole other country where it's a whole other language, whole other set of rules. You never know, right? So when you're moving around, the tip is, you know where you're going, especially if you're driving. Know if there's a border crossing, you know, that you might have to go through or not, because a lot of times there's not border crossing. You can just drive into the next country. So on this particular thing, we had a driver, and it was just me and Dan. And we asked the driver, hey, man, you know, we driving to this next country. Switzerland was the country. Is there a border crossing, right? And he was like, no, we just drive straight through. Ain't no border crossing. Right? Okay, cool. So now we was leaving Holland, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we had a little, let's just say, herbal goodness, right? But because we wasn't crossing no borders, we wasn't sweating too much, right? So now, along the way, we riding. It's a few hours. So we riding. Hey, man, you sure ain't got crossed no border, man? Nah, y'all all good. Okay, cool. So, you know, we bless the peace pipe. Let's say we bless the peace pipe, right?
Right, I got you.
Inside the vehicle there.
That's
we
nice.
Rolling, and everything is beautiful. Everything is love. This is the tour life, right? We all ride, and then all of a sudden, traffic starts to get thick, because before it wasn't really no traffic. You know, in Europe, especially in and around Germany and in those countries, you know, they have the Autobahn, and they have stretches where there's no speed limit. You can drive as fast as you want, right? So, you know, people fly by you all the time, and it'd be like, you know, mothers in station wagons with their kids strapped in doing 140, dong, and they BMW, right? So we know, we're tooling along. Everything is beautiful, bro. Everything is beautiful. People shooting past us. And then all of a sudden, traffic starts to get thick and slow down, which is, I actually had never seen this outside of the city, right? Like being inside London, yeah, but once you get on the highways, it ain't like that. It's pretty much empty. So we're going, and I start looking, and then I start seeing light and more light. And then, like, it came up, like, over the horizon. Like, it was just like a checkpoint there, right? And, man, when I tell you, we rolled down the window, and this big old cloud came out. Now, we trying to air off the truck before we get to checkpoint. We get to checkpoint. Listen. They had, you know how they had the people, like when you cross the border, they had the people in the booth right there to tell you to go or whatever?
Yeah.
And it was another guard on the outside. The car reeked so bad that the person in the booth didn't even say nothing. The dude was like, no, y'all go over there. Y'all go over there. So they sent us over there, right? Like, so we go over there, and I don't want to be too long-winded with this. We get over there. Basically, bro, we had this bundle of herbal goodness. And we couldn't throw it out the car because they didn't see it.
Right.
So, threw it in the car because it's a rental van. So push, come to shove, it was in here. We ain't got it, but it can't be on our person. It can't be in the bag. It can't be none of that, right?
Understood completely.
So, poof, do it. And it goes up under the front seat, right?
Mm-hmm.
From the back. We in the back of the van, so we in the back. It goes up under the front seat. And, you know, in Europe, the cars under the passenger seat in most cars and vans, they have like a utility drawer. It's standard in Europe, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we thought it like kind of went down into that drawer, right? So they pull us over. They smell the weed. Okay, y'all got to get out. So they take us one at a time into the building, right? So they take the driver. They take him in the back. And he come out, and he look crazy as hell. Just got, because the way they got us parked is in front of a big picture window, so we can see from the van inside, and they can see inside to the van, right?
Right.
So they take him. He come out, like when he went in, he was cool. I mean, because he feel like he's just a driver. He ain't did nothing wrong. I'm just working here, right? So he go in. When he come out the back room, he look crazy as hell. It's a foreign dude, you know, a German dude. Like he look crazy.
Did he speak any English?
Yeah, he spoke perfect English, actually.
Okay.
Right. So he came out and he looked crazy as hell. Like his face just looked different, right? And he's sitting at the table just looking at the van, just looking at him with this crazy face. So he takes Dank next. Dank go in the back room. He come back out. And his face looked just like the other dude's face. And he's just looking at me crazy. Just everybody looking at the van crazy. I'm like, what the hell about to happen? When I tell you, bro, they took me in this back room and stripped the nigga down to nothing, so I was standing on the floor with my naked feet and told me to spread my cheeks and lift my sack, my nigga. When I tell you, strip search at the Swiss land border, at the Swiss border, bro. And they went through the car, and grace of God, man, they searched that car four times. I mean, all the luggage out, everything out of the car, and they did not find the herbal goodness. They did not find it. We couldn't find it for a while.
Thirsty for that shit.
No, they could not find it. They went in and out. They went and got another dude who had a better outfit on, like, you know, because the one bunch of cops had, like, green on, and he came back. He had on, like, purple or something. He was on some other shit. He couldn't find it neither. You know what I'm saying? Like, they could not, so they had to let us go. And then we drove in silence, first off, all the way to the hotel. Right? And we drove in silence to the hotel. Right? And then, when we got to the hotel, it was like, yo, we could not believe they couldn't find it. That's first. So either one of those guys took it and stuffed it in their pocket and kept it for themselves, or it's in that van. It was in that van, bro. Best blunt I ever smoked. Best blunt I ever smoked. That blunt.
Damn.
So
that shit's crazy.
Travel rap is stories like that, with like a travel tip and then a crazy story like that. Some of them funny. Some of them just, you know, learning experiences and things like that, but really dope stories from all over the world, from Taiwan to Thailand to Russia to all over. So that's available on Amazon right now. And, you know, if you ain't got a Kindle, you can get it on deliciousvinyl.com called Travel Rap. And then so I wrote the book. I sat here at my house and figured it out, wrote it and edited and did it all myself. So it's all me, self-published and everything, right? So I decided to do some music with it. So I produced the record. I produced the EP. I did all the production. It's called Adulting, right? So being that, again, I'm elder statesman in this music thing, I made a record about being that, being an adult in this situation, right? And
Grown Man Shit was fire, too, by the way.
That was the first single. Produced by me, featuring Bodney Applebaum, my soulful songstress at large, and she, man, that's straight from, I did that in my house, and I mixed, mastered, did it all, like, it's all kind of, that's just like me, you know what I'm saying? So, that's up on all digital platforms, you can get that, and then, just last Friday, that just passed, we dropped a new Frank and Dank record, it's a single.
Fire.
Called No Cap, featuring, my man, Natago Leray, is a dude out of Norway. And I did co-production on the track, me and my man, Underworker Music.
Mm-hmm.
My guy, Andreas, out of Norway as well. We collabed on the track. So, you know, that work is out there. And like I was mentioning earlier, Dilla Fest this weekend is the big dog on Saturday, August 7th here in L.A., Grand Performances. It's going to be crazy with Talib, Fali, Frank and Dank performing, Illa J's performing. We got Redmatic from the world famous Beat Junkies. We got Daru Jones head of the trio, live band to back Talib with King Michael Coy. I don't know if y'all are familiar, but super producer. He produced on the latest Her record. It just went gold. And, you know, he did stuff for Anderson .Paak and Dre. Whole bunch of stuff like that. And you know, so they got the trio going on, and it's going to be crazy. It's going to be a crazy outdoor event, big venue, 7,000 folks in whole. Outdoor, you know, wear your mask, be safe, but we're going to have some fun.
Very, very fire. Very fire. Your man be wilding on Instagram, too. Khalid.
Who that? Oh, well, yeah. Khalid. Hey, man, you know, You can't be messing with that man. He will let you have it. He will let you have it very properly, too. He's going to give it to you. But anyway.
Hey, sir, he takes it too far sometimes, though. I must have.
You know what? One time I actually asked him, like, man, when do you sleep, bro? Between shows, the podcast, all of this activity on social media, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, all the back and forth. And when did he say, I don't know, Frank. I just do it, bro. So, yeah, I don't know. I could. Frank couldn't be the one.
It works for the nigga, though, so shout out to him.
No. It works. It works for him. Like, he does his thing. Khalib is one of the, you know, busiest. Like, he's one of the hardest working men in show business, if that makes sense, because he does a ton of things all the time and has time to go back and forth with these people.
All right, so let me ask you this. You get to do your own album. You can't rap on it, and you or Frank and Dank can't rap on it, but you can pick all the artists and the producers.
Oh, wow.
Who you fucking with?
Man. It'd be
I'm gonna make it eat a little easier. You only get four of each.
Four of each.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me think about that. I mean, obviously the go-to would be Dilla, but I think we should probably exclude Dilla because that's almost an automatic, right? So let's say other than Dilla.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
I would want. Man, who got joint fight? It's a bunch of new cats, but obviously, you know, because of my association to Dilla, you know, there's also a lot of pioneers, right? So I would definitely get one from Pete. I would definitely get one from Knox.
Okay.
So Pete Rock, Knox. Get one from Dr. Dre, right? And there's a second caveat to that. I'm getting one from Dr. Dre because I want him to mix everything.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I got you on that one.
So, Dre,
Not and Pete Rock.
Not Pete Rock and then I'll get something from like a DJ Quick. Or even like a Terrace Martin. And I got a whole album with Terrace Martin. So
I would put an Apollo Brown in that.
Well, yeah. I mean, but you know, Apollo's a given, he's Detroit, like come on.
I just got up on Apollo Brown this year, bro.
Really?
Yes.
No, Apollo's been around. Like, you know, Apollo do his thing. He jump around and he be doing tours in Europe and everything. Like, Apollo be on this thing, you know. Yeah, no, Apollo's dope. But that's Detroit, that's a given. I was trying to, you know, of course, Detroit, you know.
Oh, I'm going to fuck with the hometown first.
Yeah, you keep, but that, again, that's like, of course, that's easy. That's the easy part. Like for Detroit niggas, that's easy.
I mean, most niggas now would pick Caliber if you from Detroit.
Yeah, but you know, I don't know that that's necessarily my lane. That's it. But I guess I ain't making a record for me. So then that changes everything because you know, you can make whatever dynamic you want.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know,
and that's I would not put Helluva and Apollo Brown on the same album.
No, that's two different lanes.
Extreme.
That's two different lanes. They both don't. It's two different lanes. So,
exactly.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking, you know. But yeah, no. Come on, like Detroit is easy for us, is what I'm saying. Detroit is because we got joints. We got whichever way you want to go. If I wanted to go that way, I could stay in Detroit. You got the Nick Speeds and the Apollos, and you know, shit. I could go get something from Royce. Royce producing and the Nine, and you know, it's a lot of joint, like you know, in the lane that I'm in.
Nick Speed is fucking fire too.
Yeah, Speed is fire.
Yeah, like I've been fucking with him since like Seven the General early shit.
Speed, and then, you know, you got some of the best young RJs of the world and Black Milk, and, you know, we got joints this, so that's why I didn't say anything. It's kind of spoiled for us. You know what I'm saying? And then we got Hella Hood, and we can go another route.
Oh, man. Although, I don't, like, Helva is dope at it, but I think they treading into running into the ground for the Michigan artists.
Yeah.
Like Vezo is clearly, to me, a level above everybody else.
Yep, Vezo's doing okay.
And the beats he picked are so Detroit, but different Detroit than everybody else is picking.
Yeah.
Like, he got a lot. Sure. Actually, it's like Too Short in Detroit.
Yes.
With a better flow.
I can see that.
Yeah. And I'm an old man, too, and I fuck with Bezo heavy, bro. Rich Off Pints, I show up to work 7 o'clock in the morning bumping that shit.
Right. Look at it. That's it. For me, you know, I'm an old man, too. And I guess because I'm making the music that kind of fits in the lane that I'm in. But I'm also I like to know what the city doing, right?
Yeah,
I try to stay on all the things that's going on. And, you know, salute to the youngest, man. They get into the paper the way it's set up for them to get to right now. And, you
man.
Know, from the Sadas to the T Grizzlies to the, you know, the Bezos to the, you know, they out there running. And trust and believe that, you know, niggas like me. And you know, I would go further to say that, you know, those young niggas are probably more famous than me. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I got more years than them. That's really about it. You feel what I'm saying? But
yeah.
At this point, the way it works, the way social media works, you know, the way things, promotion works, those guys are probably more famous than me. Will it stretch out for 20-plus years? I don't know. They're going to have to, you know, find that, because we had to find that lane. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It wasn't like,
yeah.
You know, and it's a decision you have to make to not kind of follow trends and kind of stick to what you do and try to, you know, expound on what you do, make it better. But, you know what I'm saying? So it's the way you got to play. And, you know, but nah, I see the young boys. They, you know, you gotta salute that. I know where they come from.
Yo, I got a really dope plug for you too, man. When you're in the city, man, let me know.
Okay.
The best connoisseur on the planet.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm there actually. Hopefully, in the next month, I'll be around.
Yeah. Hit me up. Oh boy. Hey, y'all got a joint that Kanye produced, right?
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
How?
When Dilla was doing his solo album, label deal with MCA Records.
Mm-hmm.
Labels called me that. When he got the deal, he signed us, Frank and Dank. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the way we had it worked out, Frank and Dank would record and drop their album first, which eventually was 48 hours, the album eventually came out first. And then Dilla was going to work on his album. So we finished up our record, and he started working on his record. So when he started working on his record, he was taking beats from, you know, different folks. It wasn't
mm-hmm.
just Ego's whole record. Because ultimately, our plan was to put a Frank and Dank record. We had label money. So we was going around. We wanted to get Timberland. We wanted to do it, right? Also,
mm-hmm.
do it Detroit type shit. You know what I mean?
I feel you.
And it was the label, like, well, no, you know, maybe I should just, you know, let them do the whole thing. Probably more what, you know, we want and what would be best for y'all. And, you know, okay. I mean, when the difference is, okay, you can give the money to these guys, you can give all the money to your homeboy. You give the money to your homeboy. If especially if the work is going to be better, right? So
exactly.
So that changed our album. It went straight back to him, and he did everything for that. But for his album, okay, since we did that for y'all, we're going to do this over here for this, right? And so he's down in Virginia working with Knox. And, you know, Kanye used to be in the city a lot. So he had family in Detroit. We see Kanye at the shelter all the time, right? And just kind of chill, quiet by himself there, because that was the hip hop spot to be at. And yeah, now we see Kanye say, "Well, you know, not like that." And this is pre Kanye being that Kanye, but was always cool and what's up, right? And then of course, Kanye's close friend, ADA Key, New York cat producer. Actually, was cool, you know, one of Kanye's close friends, and he was a big Dilla head, still is, you know, a lot of respect to Dilla as the producer, blah, 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 right, like, so Kanye was kind of always around, so when Dilla got beat, he got a batch of beat from Kanye.
Okay.
And that was the one he picked, like, y'all, now we about to kill this shit. And we did it, but it didn't come out because I think Takeover came out not too long after that. And the beat is very similar to the whole beat.
Oh, wow.
So, Dilla had did a song, because we did the song originally over a Dilla beat, or some more kind of ethereal hip-hop shit. And then we said, let's take these lyrics and put them over this Kanye beat. And we did it, you know, rewrapped the verses, did the hook over, different. We did the song over. And when they dropped Dilla's album eventually, a couple years back, they dropped that as like a single kind of bonus track.
Wow. You still got shit dropping from shit 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you just did it yesterday. Like, I will say, man, y'all got like a timeless ass sound, man, and it was just a perfect blending.
I appreciate it. That was the plan, bro. That was the plan. I tell you, like, there was a lot of thought and preparation put into what we wanted it to be. You know what I'm saying? Because we wanted it to rep the D, but have flavors and other things so that it could make something timeless. You know what I'm saying? But some timeless nutrition.
So now you just randomly get a call from Q-Tip or somebody saying, man, I was listening to so-and-so, and that shit's fucking dope.
Something like that's what happened. Something like that. I mean, they met, and Dilla, you know, they met Plum at a concert in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
But Ant Fiddler was playing for, because Ant Fiddler was, like, that was like the first studio most of us thought, like Slum Village, not Frank and Dank, but early Young Frank, when I was in another group. And a lot of the fellas started at Amp's house. He had a studio in the hood, right? And he actually taught Dilla how to work the actual MPC. So Dilla was making beats on different machines before. And then he learned how to work the MPC at X-Grid. And then, you know, then he took off with that. But Ant Fiddler was playing for George Clinton.
That's Parliament. Nice. That's nice.
Parliament was on tour with Tribe. And during the tour, Ant was playing Tribe, Slum Village Records. Like, yo, you got to check these guys out. These are my guys. You know what I'm saying? They're from the deep. You know, they sound is more in y'all range, more down y'all street. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And if you check this, they'll tell you, kid on the beat, crazy, and it was group. Just as crazy. So they throughout the tour, they hear it and hear it, and then when they got to Detroit, Ant had T3 and Dilla go up there. I think it was either Silver Dome or it was out. And they went out there, got on the bus, kicked it, chopped it up. Chip was like, yo, who made these beats, though? Like, which one of y'all make the beat, basically? Dilla. That there was number, which was his number to his house. Cell phones wasn't popping like that then.
Right.
And then when Dilla, I guess when Tip got back to New York or wherever, yeah, he called Dilla Crip. Like, hey, man. Like, we got to do something. I don't know what to do right now. We want to do something. That's kind of how it started for Dilla, you know, kind of jumping into the mainstream industry. Yeah. So, yeah, man. That, you know, that changed it for all of them. All of them.
No, what's the dumbest shit you bought?
I don't know if it's the dumbest shit I bought. It's the dumbest shit I haven't bought. Or the shit I should have bought. Like, I should have probably bought a house or two in a day over the years. You understand?
Yeah.
But I spent the money not really on... like stupid shit, jewels, and I mean, don't get me wrong. I had, you know, Cardi and Mink, and I'm a Detroit nigga, so I'm a hat. Right? It's what it is. You know, change,
gotta have some buffs.
You gonna have? I mean, listen, I had 3-4 pair. Like, I had so many that I just don't even want them anymore. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we rock.
I'll take
them. Go back and look at our old shit. We been in them shit. You know what I'm saying? And this was in the late '90s, early 2000s. We was in them shit. You understand? So. The meat coats, the jewels, all I did, I've done all that. So but it wasn't that. I really spent the most money being in places outside the country. You understand?
Yeah.
Like I would go, like I, especially when I was doing like my little solo tour, like I would go and, you know, we're probably going to do 10 shows, but I'm going to stay in Germany for a month, right?
Mm.
So usually we'll go through those 10 shows, and then I can take that bag and I can go home. You understand? And then I can save some, or maybe I could have bought a house, or more, you know, a couple of cars, a couple of old schools in the back, and just had them kind of sitting or whatever the situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't spend that. I didn't take the bag home. I chip off the bag to make sure the family good, my son, my mama needs something, whatever I could do. And then the rest of this, I'm actually living in Germany for this 6 weeks. You know what I'm saying? I got a flat.
You can't replace that experience, though.
No. And that's the thing. That's the thing. Yeah. Now, you know, somebody who don't understand that part, they're going to be like, man, you could have bought a house. What the hell? I don't have a house now. You're a rapper. Yeah. And I get it. But, you know, for me personally, nah, there's things that my mind knows and seen that you would never really, you got to really be on some shit to go ahead and do that. And it's not just one place. I didn't go to 2 places. I'm still going. The month before the pandemic kicked in, I was in Europe. I flew to Europe for 24 hours to do a show. Like, literally, got on a plane from here, flew to Europe, did the show, and the next morning got on a plane, came back here because I had shows to do here. Right? So, like, you know. Like, I'm a Detroit nigga. Let me say that again. So, you know, would I want to have a nice crib off the water in Michigan somewhere and, you know, a couple of cars and whatever and have that kind of stable little homestead life? Part of me, yeah. Part of me, yeah. And I could have did that. Probably twice now. You know, because I've been at it for almost 22 years. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So probably twice now I could have bought that crib in a D, had a couple cars, and just kind of been stationary until it was time to go to work, and then go to work and come right back home. But I didn't do that. You know what I'm saying? I went from the D, and basically I was in Canada for 4 years, in Toronto, and then from there traveling out, you know, going to China, going to here, going there. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And when I left there, I could have said, you know what, let me go back to the D and do these tours and shuffle this money back into the D and buy this crib and have this piece of land, which is a good thing. I'm not saying something's wrong with that. And I probably should have done that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I didn't. I said, you know what, I'm going to go out to Cali and try to make the business connection. And I've been out here over a decade now. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
Damn.
You know, it ain't easy doing it the way I'm doing it because there's certain things that I'm a grown-ass man. I got eight kids. You know what I'm saying? So I got a different view of it. There's certain shit I'm not going to do and certain things things I'm not going to expose. And in the way the music shit works now, the music is almost a byproduct. Lifestyle is first.
Fact.
You got to be willing to expose that lifestyle. And the crazier it is, the better. The more records you're going to sell. The more airtime you're going to get. The more TV time you're going to get. The more you're going to get pressed into the algorithms and YouTubes and Instagrams. Well, again, I'm an old school dude at this point. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When I got introduced to, not when I became part of the industry, but when I got introduced to the way the industry worked, you know, it didn't work that way. And if you got to change, it didn't work. And I get it. You got to change with the times and move with the times. And yes, I got a presence on social media, and I do digital music. I don't really be worried about printing up vinyl on that type no more because that ain't where it's at, really. Unless the money's there to make it work for you. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's a different time, but for me, it's a lot of things I'm not going to do that equate to that type of fame or that type of thing in this time. Right? So it's cool. Out for that, you know, I guess I don't have the house in the Diddy, but I have flight miles out this world because I've been all over the place. You know what I'm saying? And instead of putting that money back in there, which probably would have been a good, great investment, I spent that money, you know, going to Burma and, you know, forming that art gallery in Burma. Who the hell does that? You know what I'm saying?
I mean, you got to think about it, though. A lot of niggas waste money on shit that they don't even remember.
Yeah.
Got drunk at the titty bar and spent 50 stacks.
Yeah, no.
Goofy shit like that.
I mean,
like, you did some memorable shit.
Don't get me wrong. I just spent some money on some titties now.
I've never understood that, bro. I'm the cheapest nigga on the planet. I have never been in
When we did it, and a lot of niggas won't believe this. I mean, don't get it twisted. The girls and the nice bodies and asses and all that is awesome. Great for a young, strapping man. Right? Okay. I'm not fronting on any of that. I'm not fronting on that. So I won't pretend that I'm trying to be this guy that's trying to be all Frank old now, and now he's just going to be all righteous and, you know, holier than thou. And instead of, no, man, I understand the carnal side of it. I was there. I was a young man in the strip club. I started going at 18. I was going to the Outcast. Right? So.
Ooh. Damn,
yeah.
Bro.
Yeah, son. Yeah, this ain't a game with me. Like, you know,
I've actually been to the cast a couple of times, man.
Yeah, man.
I'm fucking around over there.
Yeah, it was wild in there, right? Like, I was going to 18. Me and T3 from Plum Village used to go over there. And Dylan, and, you know, that's where I met Trip Trip. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Wait a minute. Did you miss? I think you might have missed the dancery.
No. You missed the dancery, bro. No, we went to dancery. We used to go. Damn. We started at the dancery when they had the kids on Sundays from 3 to 8. Yeah.
Oh man. That's...
Me, Dylan, and Dak used to be in there every week, bro. A shootout for now. It don't matter.
Oh my God.
It don't matter. I watched somebody get shot right there, right at the back in the dancery at the back dance floor. I watched a dude get elected. The whole club ran to the front, and it was me, the dude who got shot, and the shooter right there. Watch him pop that dude around the side door. Nah, man. It's real. I'm a Detroit nigga, bro.
Yo, hey. Hey, we used to get that bitch deep.
Yeah, you had to. The only thing that got us to pass is we was the hip-hop nigga. Because, you know, in a dancery, they playing bass and booty music back then for 90% of the night. And they would give us 15 minutes to play some Tribe and Busted and whatever. And we would get our little hip-hop dance on, and they cut that shit off and get back to the booty music. It's over.
Yeah, man. Yeah, we need that Two Live Crew, bro.
Yeah, the Two Live had to be, and I get it, because I wanted to be the girl, you know, too. It's just I happen to dance hip-hop, so let me get my little sweat on for a minute. Then we back to grinding on these girls. Yeah, I get it. I ain't tripping. And that's at 13, bro. I mean, you know, that was a 13 to 18 crowd.
Yo, man.
Yeah, bro.
Because my people's, like, I grew up on West 7 Mile in Southfield.
Mm-hmm.
But my cousins, I had some cousins that stayed on Van Dyke and Gratiot.
And right. My other cousin stayed on Chalmers and Mac.
Okay. Yeah. No, I was Chalmers and Jefferson. Well, not Chalmers. I was Marlboro, which is the next street over from Chalmers.
Yeah, next street over.
Jefferson.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
I was Marlboro,
shit, man.
Jefferson.
It was literally like, I don't know, two blocks away from Jefferson.
Yeah, yeah. Straight up the block. Yep. No, no. So yeah. I was there when I was, because my mother, I didn't move here. My mother moved here when I was like 4 months old, 5 months old, to Detroit. And she's from Pittsburgh, right? So when I moved here, we moved on to the West Coast. We lived on LeSure. LeSure and, right in LeSure, and I don't want to say Puritan, but it was right by Puritan.
Okay.
Damn it. I can't think of the main street no more. But anyway, it was over in that, on the west, on LeSure, and I want to say Joy Road, maybe? I don't know. But over there, it was West Coast. And then we moved over to Chalmers. And then later on, like, I was in Southwest Detroit, like, the, you know, McGraw and Michigan area, McGraw and Livernois, you know what I'm saying? Like, and
those are like two different planets right there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and you know, where we lived over there was like, you know, more like the immigrant space where, you know, you had all the people from Eastern Europe and Spanish immigrants that just got into the country. A lot of them didn't speak English, you know what I'm saying? And
so
like,
you know, over there with the Mexicans.
Yep. And then finally, when I was probably 12, when I was 12, moved over on 7 Mile and Ryan. And my family kind of still in that area now. Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm a Detroit boy.
Until
I decided to run out in the world, and now I'm a world citizen.
So, shit, you obviously like it out there in Cali, though.
Yeah, the weather's beautiful. Weed is great. It's cool. It's a lot of different. It's different than home. You understand? But it's a lot of things that's alike, you know. But Cali wasn't a decision to go. It wasn't like, oh, I like Cali, I'm going to go there. It was like, hey, man, Cali's good for business. And I'm going to go there.
I feel you.
And you know, right now, the business ain't done yet. I ain't done just yet. I got things I still got in play that I still want to do and things I want to artistically get off and pull it off, hopefully make that $1 billion off of it, but it's not, whatever. You know what I'm saying? So it's things that I want to do. So it ain't, you know, but I ain't doing it for that. I'm doing it because, you know, I'm an artist at this point. I've done it long enough and without having $1 billion to be an artist now. You know what I'm saying? So I'm sensitive about my shit. Ain't that what they say? But so, yeah, no, you know, it's just, I'm here. Things that I still want to do is things that, you know, being here in the action, it's certain things you just can't be in. It's like you can't. There's only a few places things like that will happen very randomly.
Yeah.
I'm saying, like,
I feel you.
Living here, being, like, I had a spot in Hollywood. And I mean, I'm in East Hollywood now, but the spot before was, like, really central Hollywood. And the things that would happen and the people that would show up, you know, being that you in Hollywood, it made it that much easier. You get what I'm saying? It's like, it's like Jerobi from Tribe Called Quest. That's my guy, right? And, I mean, everybody, rest in peace, like, Tiff, Shahid, they're my brothers, they all. And one day, I'm at the crib just chilling, and Tribe was in town. It was like, for something. I don't know what they was in town for, but they was in town. And they were staying in Hollywood at the, you know, the old school prominent hotel, the Roosevelt. I lived the next block over from Roosevelt. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So,
that's dope.
And I have a picture, randomly, you know, the Roby's just kind of in my living room, just chilling. You know what I'm saying? Like, random as hell. It's only a few places things like that can happen, is what I'm saying. And where you can just walk in, you run into somebody that you don't you don't know. Or, like, I don't know, it's a comedian by the name of Russell Peters, right? And, you know, he's a huge, he's an Indian guy, huge comedian. He lives out here. I've known the guy 20 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
I met him when we were in Canada. That's my guy, one of my close friends. He's a super mega comedian, super mega comedian. Tell you a quick story. And, you know, he up there on that level where, you know, it's literally Bentleys and big houses and Maybachs and that type of thing, right? And, you know, and he's like a real normal, real chill, down-to-earth dude. It's chill, like it's chill, and I've known him for so long that, you know, I can come to the big mega house to come over there and, you know, kick it with him or whatever. He might not even be there because he all take care of him and he'll be back. But, you know, Frank is you. Go in there, whatever, right? So I pull up over there one day. I'm chilling. And, you know, like he got, you know, people that work on his team, you know, DJ. So it's people that I know. I know all these people, right? Hey, what's up? What's going on? And so I'm chilling. And I'm about to roll me up something and go in the back and smoke me something, right? Because I'm waiting on you anyway, so I might as well be chilling. And, you know, this house is beautiful. I'm chilling. This beautiful views, a nice pool. I'm chilling, right? I go in the back, slide the door, close the door, grab my little thing and about to light up. Out the corner of my eye, I say, somebody's sitting right there. I turn and look. Nigga, it's Big Daddy Kane.
Oh, shit.
Just on the cell phone, just chilling. Just chilling.
That's fucking dope.
He ain't there for nothing in particular. He's chilling because that's my homeboy is his homeboy too. It just so happened to be. Just
that's
chilling,
fucking
bro.
Dope.
So now it's, oh, Kane, what up, bro? Kane, super cool. Think that he can. You know, I ain't tell him that Nick, you know, as a kid, I was at the Fresh Fest when you came out of the big giant jacuzzi, nigga, with the bras, and I was there. As a fan, I was there watching because I was, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was there. I didn't tell him that, but, I, you know, but for me, like, it's only so many places that type of thing is going to happen. And just the people I've met, just going to his New Year's Eve party, the things he's had me walk into, hit me up, bro, I'm playing this club out here, come on here. Walk in the back, it's Arsenio Hall and George Lopez, and you know what I'm saying?
You kidding me?
Nah, man. Nah, bro. Like, he had I'll tell you something else. But this, and it, again, these are things that you can't, it don't happen here. And it goes back to the reason I'm here. Right?
Mm-hmm.
He had a big show, like a 7,000-seat venue, right? Sold out.
That's nice. Jeez.
All the homies trying to get backstage, this, that, third, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's like a Friday or something. The Sunday before that, out here in another city outside of L.A., but not that far, like real quick, right? He's doing a charity event, right? With Mike Tyson, right? Mike Tyson is homie. Mike Tyson on my bucket list is somebody I want to meet, right? It's only a couple people, and it's Tyson and Eddie Murphy, right? I've met some heavyweights. It was like, whoa, hey man, you're you, you know, from Herbie Hancock to Janet Jackson, right?
Whoa, you bet Janet Jackson.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you gotta tell me that one, bro.
I'll fill you in. I can't tell a little hair. It ain't nothing like that. It was just, I met her. But, what the hell was you talking about?
The people you were talking about who you met, y'all was talking about the fundraiser with Mike, you were talking about the fundraiser with Mike Tyson.
Oh, yeah, so, check it out. So he said, okay, Frank, I got to do this Mike Tyson thing. Big Show, I'm going to hook you up. but it's going to be crazy. You might have to ride with this person and come in because everybody's going crazy for the big show. I say, bro, listen, I don't want to go to the big show. Take me to the chariots with Mike Tyson. You need to access to that one. Big show is cool. I've been to big shows with you. It's all good. I want to go over here, Mike Tyson. Right? Now, I don't even know that I will meet Mike Tyson. But I'd rather be at the Mike Tyson event. It's a weed event. You know what I'm saying? It's a weed and charity event. So, you know, for the cause, the whole shot, right? So I go to the thing, and I'm in the back, you know, as usual, blazing away, kicking it. You know? You watch The Sopranos?
Yeah.
You know who Chuck Zito is?
Damn,
Chuck Zito was on The Sopranos. I can't think of his
name
on it.
I'm trying to figure out which one he is.
Oh, man, I can't think of his name on it. But at any rate, so characters like he's a big, Chuck Zito's a big guy. He's some guy. He's known for his relation to the Hells Angels. You know what I'm saying? And also actor, right? And it's like all these little MMA fighters around, right? And, you know, because all these guys mess with Mike, right? They got love and respect for Mike, so they all here. Chilling. So, you know, a lot of them, you know, especially MMA fighters, I don't really know their face. But, you know, I'm getting schooled by certain people. Champion. You know, okay. I'm chilling. So my homie come out. My homie Rush come out. Say, hey, Frank, hey, come with me, man. So I put my little blunt out. And I walk all to the back with him. I don't know where he's taking me to. We just inside this venue, right? And it's like backstage and all the doors is closed. So he just goes to a door and walk in. Now, he's hosting the event. So I assume that this is probably his backstage, right? So he walk in and see him. And I hear him talking because he's in front of me. When I turn into the door, Mike Tyson is sitting right there. Right? But not only Mike Tyson with his wife and his son.
Oh, wow.
This is his private time. Ain't nobody even supposed to be in here, but my guy is, him, that's Mike and him is homie. Right? Listen, when I tell you Mike Tyson said the most scary, polite shit to me I've ever heard in my life, this is the most scariest, polite shit I've ever heard. He didn't even say it to me. He didn't say it to me, bro. I'm standing there, and listen, I'm not one of those guys that run up and, oh, man, I'm such and such. I'm not that guy. I know how to just chill out, right?
Right.
When I step in the room, I'm kind of off in the corner. I'm just letting them talk and kick it. And this man, Mike Tyson, say, hey, Russ, so who's your friend then? Nigga went, you talking about nigga face straightened up, his whole back straightened up? I was like, oh. My guy say, oh, no, this is my guy, Frank. You know, he works with Dylan, you know, great rapper, he's an MC, and he came out to support him. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, okay. Hey, Frank, how you doing? Nah, pound with Mike Tyson. Get my little picture with Mike Tyson.
Nice.
Then and then after that, I'm talking to his son. You know, his son, a big, he's younger. He's like probably 17 or 18, 16 or 17, really. He's big. He's like his dad. Big, stout kid, right? And, you know, and his wife is there. His wife's a doctor. So, and, you know, we're laughing because, I mean, you know, I have a son as well. So we talking about sons and, you know, she's talking about how she be putting him in the headlock. It was just, you know, just like camaraderie, just chilling. Man, Mike Tyson gets up, throws him in the back, and brings me a joint, bro. Here, smoke that, right? I said, ah, my day is done. Mr. Tyson,
man,
this is it. You the man. I'm going to leave you alone. Get out your space, man. I appreciate you. Good to meet family. Thank you, bro. I'm out. Nigga, you talking about set? I'm set. All I got to meet is Eddie Murphy. I'll be good to go. I don't need to meet nobody else. I mean, I'm sure I will, but I don't need to. I don't need to. Yeah, no.
That's crazy, though, bro.
But things like that, I don't think can just happen. You need to be here. Maybe New York. But I ain't. somewhat I experienced it like that in New York. I can't say that. I have, because that's where I met Jet. But it wasn't me. It was Dylan. I just happened to be with Dylan. So,
Sam, but you did Janet, though. Oh, yeah.
Janet, you know, it's crazy. Like, it's like she sounds like how she sounds and looks on TV. It was like, you know, because that's the only experience with her I've ever had is her on TV. And she's, like, right here. And it's just like she sounds like Janet. And it's just like, it was weird. It's like sweet and soft. Everything about a woman came out of her face. I didn't understand. Like, y'all, like, I was there. We in the studio, and I'm just like, okay. Like, they talking and cracking jokes, Dylan being funny and shit. You know, I'm stunned, so I can't even believe he making control jokes to Janet Jackson. Right? Like, he ain't making just Janet Jackson control, so this nigga's doing control to Janet Jackson. Bro, I had to turn around and just stare at the board because I would have been staring at her. And then it would have made him look weird. And it would have made, you know what I'm saying? And we was there with Q-Tip. Q-Tip introduced me. Right? Because Q-Tip was in the studio. It was crazy. We was in New York. And he just kind of called to come to the studio. And when we walked in, Jenny was sitting there. Because he wanted Dylan to meet Jenny.
Crazy.
It was some next level there. Like, I've never, like, you know how, typically a woman to say, okay, let's say that everybody has a preference, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody likes certain things about certain people. Like me, I like a girl with a big smile and big lips, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's just what I like. So, but sometimes you find girls that might not be, like, if you look at them in the face, it might not be what you would pick for yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Still, but it's still something just really, really, like, sexy or attractive about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even not a girl you would pick for yourself, but still, you can't not acknowledge her. The sex appeal that comes off of this woman. Right? So, women like that. I get it, like, exudes, well, at least at the time. I don't know about now. It wasn't recent. This was years and years and years ago. But that time, I guess it, like, came out of her. Like, where you just, as a man, you just like, oh, shit, okay. All right. I'm going to look over here because I'm going to look like a stalker. If I don't, like, so I'm going to stare at the board. That's what I did. I stared at the board. So I wouldn't like a stalker, bro.
Mm-hmm.
I can, you know, I'm here with my homie. Like, I'm here on his path. So I can't embarrass him, too. So when I tell you that that woman there, that woman had it coming out of her, bro. I see why she had a secret marriage. whoever the secret marriage husband was could not take it. We going to get married, girl. Fuck this shit. I'm trying to keep you forever. So, yeah. You know, but
man.
Again, things like that don't happen in your everyday time. Like in Detroit, there would have to be a lot of jostling for something like that to happen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it would have to be something, just a huge ass shit going on, and then
once in a lifetime
type shit. Yeah. You out there
well,
in Cali, you know, it's every Thursday.
And there you go. And even with the Janet thing in New York, it was literally, me and Dylan was going to get food. It wasn't even, you know, it wasn't thought of, had nobody mentioned it, it possibly might be happening. No, it was a friend. Hey, man, what you doing? You free? Give me a cat, come over here. And that was that.
That's
so, you
crazy,
know,
bro. Damn,
here,
boy. You done had a fucking life, man.
Hey, man, I'm blessed, man. I can't say that I have any regrets in doing music. Doing, life would have looked really different if I had chosen other things. But I'm
absolutely,
really
I know
cool.
The feeling.
I'm really cool.
And I know.
With, so, you know what I mean?
I'm not going to take up too much of your time, too, bro. I don't want to get greedy. But let me ask you one thing, totally off topic. Did you see the verses?
Yeah. Well, bits and pieces. I didn't watch the whole thing.
Because I was, you know, in the middle of being a promoter myself. But, yes, I did see the verses. And, listen, let me explain something to you. There's only a few people that I listen to everything they do.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a lot of that for me. And I think part of that is because I actually make music. But you don't want to get and end up being like this person because you did ingest so much, right? But I'm
right.
I'm one who keeps my eye on things and not acknowledge and, you know, I'm not a hater. Even if I don't like a record, I can't hate on the numbers. Numbers don't lie. You know what I'm saying? Even in my cup of tea, numbers don't lie. And, you know, Dipset got some hits.
Yeah.
They got hits.
Man.
They got hits. And it's not, you know, they ain't always my cup of tea. You know, they New York Harlem boys.
I'm going to be more unpolitically correct than you. Generally speaking, I've always thought Dipset was trash.
Okay. See. Well, there you go. But here's the thing. But they got some big records.
But they got hits.
They got hits, right? So when I heard they was going to go up against the Locks, right, when it was the Locks, and then when I seen kind of the Instagram kind of, you know, pre-back and forth where it was kind of making it, you know, battle. It's a battle. This ain't, you know, it ain't friendly warfare. This is battle, right? Not that it was going to be beef, but, you know, we're going hit for hit. We got the one, right?
So, man. That energy is going to be off the roof, off the hook for both of them.
Yeah, so the energy was like that. It was that type of energy. It was that type of time. And when I start to analyze, because I'm a analyzer, right? So when I got to looking at it, I'm like, okay, Dipset got hit. But the Locks? People don't take into account because it's Locks and it's D-Block, and I get it. The Locks started with Pussy. And then they went to the Rough Riders. So that means they got hits all about the Benjamins. And then Rough Rider anthems, too. Like, you know what I'm saying?
But you know what, though, man? No, it was the performance.
No, I get that. But I'm talking about they got some monsters. They got Mariah Carey records. Like, they got Grammys and all. So numbers don't lie. Personal things, whatever. But it was a little bit of a mismatch based on numbers. Let's just say that. And then you're right, the live performance, you know, they the whole New York hip hop thing, you can't be out there over your vocals over every song. You gotta, you know, it's a lot to it and the Locks treated it like a regular show. They didn't treat it like, you know, kind of a TV spectacle.
Man.
You understand? They treat it like a show. So I was just telling my homie, one of the lines, the Jada Kid said, I'm not gonna repeat it, but them freestyles was hard and then, you know, he's rhyming over who shot you. Like they just went, which, you know, I guess, but I don't know. I don't wanna, you know, I'm trying to be politically correct here. I don't wanna say Dipset lost.
I am not.
I just want to say that Dipset was in a mismatch.
And the sad part about it is that the only reason they lost is because of their arrogance. They just like, you know what, we got hits. You know, like they was thinking of the verses, you know, when they first started. When people weren't performing, they were just playing their songs.
Playing 20 songs, they 20 biggest records. Yeah.
Exactly. And the Locks changed the whole game on them. Like, they were so flawless as performers. I mean, from, like, and I was saying this earlier. There's one part where I think it's Ghost. They're doing his song. And Jadakiss is not even, he's got his back turned to him. And he is spitting every line.
Mm-hmm.
Every word. Of Ghost shit, like it was his own shit.
Mm-hmm.
You wasn't seeing that with Dipset. You know, like just the energy, the you could tell the locks is that them niggas love each other.
Yeah.
The Dipset got paid together. Huge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can see that. I can see that because I tell you something crazy. Like a lot of times I rehearse songs. Like when I'm taking a shower, I let the my songs that we perform play. The water was in my ear. I couldn't even hear. And it was dank verse. And mind you, these is the acapella. So, I mean, an instrumental. So, there ain't no words in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I picked up on the beat. And I knew dank verse. I started with that, you know. I picked up and finished dank verse out until the chorus came in. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, no, I understand that part. Knowing your partner's rhymes. Because it's all y'all music. It's y'all music. You know what I'm saying?
Man.
There's a love affair with it. So, And you know, maybe they ain't for everybody. Everybody don't have a passion for it like that.
Yeah, man. And I think that was like, if Dipset had given half the energy that Lox did, the cohesiveness, it would have been a totally different story. You know, because they was playing songs. I'm like, wow, they did do this. They did do this. Like, they had hits. They got joints.
Like, I can't even front. Again, you know, whatever. Personal feelings aside, they got joints. So, Lox got some shit.
And then old boy fell off the stage.
Oh, who fell off the stage?
Jim Jones.
Oh, see, I didn't see that part.
Oh, man, my God, bro. Well, let him tell it. He dove off the stage because his ring fell off. Okay.
Oh. okay. All right. I didn't see that part. I'm glad I didn't see that part. I don't want to do it.
I happened to see it. I didn't see it, you know, when I was watching it. I guess I didn't watch the last 10 minutes or something. I don't know. But I happened to see a clip of this shit today, and I was like, oh, wow, that's cool. And I seen the clip of him talking about it, and he's like, yeah, man, I didn't fall off the stage, man. Y'all tripping, man. My ring came off, and I dove head first. Okay, bro, I saw the footage. No, you didn't.
All right. I don't want to see the footage. I'm going to avoid that footage like the plague, bro. I don't want nothing to do it.
Sometimes you gotta just take the L peacefully, you know, respect.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you just gotta quietly bow out, and, you know. But everybody ain't going to do that. And maybe he lost his ring. I don't know. I frankly don't know. I ain't seen the video. And I don't want to see it.
Oh, my God. You do, man. You kind of do, man.
I'm going to stay off the internet for a couple days just for that.
YJ can say tell this part I did not hear. I'm quoting somebody off the internet. I'm quoting a lot of people off the internet. But they said that Jadakiss told, what did he say? I know some niggas that went to jail to get their teeth fixed and then pointed at who else.
Yes, he did. And I saw that. I said, oh. I think that's probably about the time I turned it off. I said, oh. Oh, no, man. I got dealing with stuff. I got work to do. I'm promoting the party this weekend. I got to go do some work.
Niggas are so petty. Is the pettiest
New York hip hop, though. That is New York hip hop at its finest. At its finest, let me tell you. I saw most of it. Well, not most of it. Bits and pieces. I saw bits and pieces.
See, man, Detroit needs Rock Bottom and the Cheddar Boys. If we could honestly do that, that would be so dope. A versus between those two, just for Detroiters. Man, because for my money, man, there is Big Hurt is the GOAT.
I can see that.
You know, that's just my. And then when I try to tell niggas outside of Detroit, and they, you idiot, you stupid, no, bro, like you ain't grow up in the city, you don't know.
Yeah, no, like I explained to them, like you know, Trey, as a music consumer, we lucky because we get. A little of everything, we get everything. But also, we have a whole hometown thing of our own that we get and we bang, if not harder than we bang the stuff from outside. You know, the difference is people from outside of Detroit can come and
and live real good. Because we're very hospitable to out-of-towners that don't go against the rules. You know what I'm saying? So,
exactly, yes.
You know, if you can get past security. Now, once you're in the city, as long as it's all love, Detroit is a beautiful place to be. But like, you know, for a guy that's selling records in hip-hop, as long as you can move around proper and not get yourself in too much trouble, the ladies is beautiful, the food is good, you know. It's a nice place for that. So,
facts.
But on the flip side, you know, we have a homegrown kind of thing, and the people that the streets love and the D love, and especially probably the street love to the radio love to the they bigger stars than the dudes coming in. So, you know, Detroit is special in that. It's special in that, and it's a double-edged sword because it's the same with Dilla being, you know, a polarizing figure in the world. And not that he's not recognized at home, he is. But it took a little while longer. You know, he got street in some town in Paris named after him. I mean, some town in France. But he ain't got one in D. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like I say, he wasn't, you know, like he may have had stuff, but like his music wasn't flashy.
Mm-hmm.
He just made timeless shit that people didn't realize at the time how timeless his shit was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then
he wasn't a talk about it type of guy. He was
exactly.
More doing the.
And that's one thing about Detroit niggas. We kind of gonna tell you what we doing.
Yeah, no, that's definitely gonna tell you. You definitely gonna know what the hell is going on. And he wasn't
right.
Like that.
He wasn't like that.
No, he wasn't like that at all. He wasn't like that at all. Like like niggas had to search. Like when the bread was up and he was producing heavy and doing all this stuff and we was hitting bars, you know. The street niggas had to, you know, go out on the street and do their checks to see where the money was coming from.
Right.
For us. Because he wasn't, this thing ain't in the places I'm in with, you know, with this money getting fixed. So where does money come from? And then when they found out he was in music, it's all up. But he wasn't going to tell you. You had to do your research. But it was serious because certain people knew. Like, you know, we got pulled over by some cops that pulled us over to ask him what the Uma meant. Because he had Uma, was the name of his production company with Q-Tip and Ali Shaheed, right?
Right.
And he had a license plate. And, you know, 20-something black dudes in a big Lexus truck when they first dropped. Big boy, gold packaged up like crazy. 412s in the back. We banging down the street. We look nuts out there. Cops flip the lights, and then roll up to the side of the window and say, hey, man, what that Uma mean? Dilla don't say, oh, that's my production team. He tells them what it actually means in fucking Swahili or whatever. Brotherhood, it means brotherhood. Right? And then the cops say, hey, man, the cops say, yeah, no, the Uma, man, the production team, right? You JD, right? Jim was like, yeah, that's me. What's up, man? I love your music, bro. And they turned the lights off and spent off. So, it was certain niggas who knew. It was, you know, but you had to be in that lane.
That's crazy.
Yeah, man.
And hella illegal.
Yeah, hella illegal. But, you know, that's, man, you don't want to, you know, Dilla made a song, you know, he made Extra Police. He made his version of that. And it's real. It's not because it was the key thing to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, he made that record because it was really there, because they really, we met this too. You know, we was in the hood, but we had stuff. And then it wasn't.
I remember Big Fo beat niggas' asses.
Mm-hmm. And, cops run up on us. I ain't selling crack this week, bro. So, ain't that you can do, man? Like, you know, I know you used to niggas in cars like this selling crack. Mile a minute. They got
bust on the ashtrays, four illegal pistols, and I get it. Straight. But not today. Do you understand? This nigga got lawyers. They got lawyers on retainer, bro. Like, we ain't got to do that no more. It ain't that serious. We make records, man. We go to the studio and mix records, bro. Not that serious. I know this car is nice. I know his Rolex is shining and making you sick. That's a year's salary on his record. I get it. But that ain't his fault. He didn't choose to be a cop right now. And no, they didn't like that, boy. They ain't like that. But, you know, that's how I go. That's how I go. Like, would nobody ever think it? Because, you know, because of what the music represents. You understand? Like, his music said something different than Detroit.
Facts.
You know what I'm saying? Right. That, well,
absolutely.
Then, like, the street and hood mentality that comes with Detroit. His music says something a little different. And not even just his music, the artists he worked with and the music that they make, all that says something different. Didn't that.
Man.
So, I get it. I get it, but that don't mean that he didn't go through it. That don't mean that we didn't go through it. That don't mean that, you know, we ain't know what it is. We just approached it different. How we willing to display it. But you know.
Shit, I'm not bad at that at all. That's the wise move.
Yeah. You know, I think it was all for a reason. So, yeah, no, nah, man. I don't regret none of it, man. You know, I good life growing up. You get to see the good balance, bro. From seeing niggas when I'm 14 being shot in the club to, you know, being in Burma with a driver and living on the, I'm staying on the Royal Estate. You know what I'm saying?
I take it. I'm sure most of us would.
You know what I'm saying?
And salute to you, man.
I appreciate it, bro. Like, you know, it's for me to talk about. It's for, you know, other guys to see up. Yep. You can do it, and you ain't got to lose you. You know what I'm saying?
Stay true to yourself, man.
A lot of people can lose themselves trying to find it. And, you know,
letting other people define who they are.
Exactly. I'm not, you know, I don't really do that. That's not really my thing. I'm okay.
Well, if ain't nobody told you, bro, I'm proud of you.
I appreciate you, brother. My mama tell me all the time, but I appreciate you.
Hey, man, you got to take those. Oh,
I take it. Well, I take it, you know. It's not. It's definitely not. We don't do it as much as we should.
Man,
as a whole.
You know, I learned that the hard way last year, man. Rest in peace to my parents. Shout out to y'all.
Yeah, man.
You know, but I'm gonna go ahead. I'm gonna let you go, bro. I know you got a lot of shit to do, man. Let them know one more time what you got coming up this weekend.
This weekend, Dilla Fest going down August 7th in downtown LA at Grand Performances, California Plaza. Gates is at 6 p.m. Going to 10. We got Talib Kweli, DJ Redmatic, Frankie Dank, Billy J, and live trio with Darwood Jones and some other great musicians going down. And yeah, man, go cop that new Frankie Dank called No Cap. Go get my book. I told you it's one story. You got a story for free on here. Travel rap. All the stories is just as good as that. And then, you know, check out the rest of music that goes with it. It's called Adulting. All online is your favorite little spot. And yeah, man, you know, break near it all the social media. And yeah, that's it.
Well, definitely appreciate you, King. And hopefully this ain't the last time we have a conversation because I thoroughly enjoyed myself.
That's what's up. Nah, man, let's do it. Whenever you need, brother, just holler at me and we'll make it happen.
Oh, I got you. No doubt, man. And when you get back in the city, let me know, man. I got, you know, I'll hook you up.
Yeah. I'm on your heels, dog.
Hey, as a matter of fact, have you heard of Turtle Pie Company?
No, I haven't.
Oh, I think they out there. Matter of fact, they out there on the West Coast. They in the Bay, though. Yeah, we had this CEO on. I had this CEO on. Was it last week or the week before? I'm going to put you on. Shout out to my people's A1 selections for connoisseurs only. Go check them out on Instagram. Make sure you follow my Instagrams. My Skin Is My Sin and the number one, and Intellectually Petty Radio.
Yes, sir.
No doubt, man. Other than that, man, it has been a beautiful conversation, man. Man, keep doing your thing, bro. You're already a legend, man. Just keep us informed on what you're doing, man, and I'll help in any way possible.
I appreciate you, brother, and you stay up and have a good rest of the day, evening, morning. I don't know what time it is right now, but all right, for sure, bro.
All right, now, peace to you, man. Tell the family I said thank you for loaning you to us for a few hours.
All right, for sure. Same to you, bro. Tell the family I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Peace out.
Okay, for sure. Peace.